Hello, I'm Ray Clark. It's hard to imagine in these days of satellite radio, digital radio, FM stereo, and a choice of radio stations that at one time in this country we had four radio stations. The Light Programme, the Home Service, the Third Network, and Radio Luxembourg, which wasn't really in this country at all.
It's half a minute after 12 o'clock midnight at Radio Luxembourg, broadcasting on 208 meters medium wave, 49.26 meters shortwave. This is one of your friends at the friendly station, wishing you a very, very good night. Sleep tight. God bless. And a special good night to you.
And if Radio Luxembourg wasn't exciting enough for you, tune to the BBC.
BBC Light Programme from London. Half past five this morning, weather and news summary, followed by breakfast special with David Simons. Housewife Choice is introduced this morning by Keith Fordyce. And that takes us through till 5 to 10 and our morning prayers.
Something just had to change.
This is Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station. We are on the air every day from 6 in the morning to 6 at night. The time right now is 1 minute past 12, and that means it's time for Christopher Moore.
Hello, and happy Easter to all of you. This is Christopher Moore with the First Record program on Radio Caroline. The First Record is by the Rolling Stones, and I'd like to play it for all of the people who worked to put the station on the air, and particularly for Ronan.
With that one announcement from an old ship anchored off Harwich, Britain became a more colourful, fun place to be. The swinging 60s were here.
I wanna tell you how it's gonna be.
Everything was right for this radio revolution, even with a song called Not Fade Away in the top 10. It was 1964. There'd been a boom in births after the war years. This had produced a new breed of Britain, young people wanting to throw off our grey image and conforming to rules and regulations. The Beatles had started a British cultural revolution, and now, thanks to Radio Caroline, we could all be part of it. I was 9 years old when Radio Caroline started, and from day one, I no longer wanted to be a train driver when I grew up. A life as a disc jockey sounded so much more exciting. And I wasn't alone. Everyone, it seemed, was in love with the Pirates.
Caroline, sound of the nation. Caroline, sound of the land. Caroline, sound of the nation.
Dallas Wilcox was a teenager living in Tiptree.
I don't think it was the first day that they broadcast, but it must have been that weekend, which was the Easter weekend in 1964, of course. And it was the ding-ding of the Caroline bell that really sticks in my mind, and the music, of course. And I thought, what have we got here? This is something that's going to really be good.
Vivian Barnard lives in Chelmsford and remembers the day well, with the help of her day-by-day diary of the entire decade.
Easter Monday, 30th of March, 1964. After being out all day on a countryside ramble with fellow members of the Chelmsford Cathedral Youth Club, I returned home and listened to a new radio station that I had read about in the newspaper, called Radio Caroline. It began broadcasting on Saturday, the 28th of March.
Vivian, together with thousands of others, decided they'd like the sound of the new radio station. It was different.
Simon Dee presented most of the programmes. He had a nice, easy-going manner and a lovely voice. I can remember that the record he played very much was Walk On by Dionne Warwick. And I remember him saying about that particular record, don't just sit there, go out and buy it. We'd never been spoken to like that by the BBC announcers.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by. Walk on by, make believe that you don't see the tears, just let me grieve in private, cause each time I see you, I'll break down and cry.
This is the story of how radio changed forever in our country, and how pirate radio affected our everyday life.
Saturday the 11th of April, so my parents took me out in our Ford popular car to Wood in Margretting in Essex to pick primroses. I carried my mother's transistor radio into the wood, tuned into Radio Caroline, and it frightened a rabbit away.
Wherever you go. You can sleep with the blues on this wonderful, wonderful station. Just take a lively companion wherever you go. Take a portable radio. Take a portable radio.
Albert Hood lived in Thorpley, Soken.
I weren't really into pop music at that time. I remember sort of driving around Clacton and that, trying to pick up Luxembourg, which was a hit and a miss, and all this, that and the other. Not much else. And then because these came along and the little portable radios popped up everywhere, and you went down to Clacton, everybody got a little radio, or even a big radio, and that. But there's radios everywhere.
If you listen, it sounds like Caroline.
Peter Punchard remembers well the impact that Radio Caroline had on him when he heard it on a portable radio.
I was out on my cycle, I was only about 14 at the time, and I met one of my friends riding along with a transistor radio on his bike, Caroline on it, and saying, "Have you heard this?" I haven't. My radio doesn't receive it very well. Then I went home and I had to go and get a radio. And my next move was to go and buy a radio that would receive it.
It was a good time to be a radio manufacturer. Here's John Lawson.
It was a Binnertone, and for some reason I must have seen an advert for it in the paper, and I must have said something to my parents about, "Oh, I like that," because they promised me transistor radio if I got my 11 plus, which I did, fortunately. And so we went down to the market stall. I remember the stall that had all these radios on it, and there was this Binnertone radio with a gold brushed front and cream plastic case. They bought it for me.
Within days, the disc jockeys on Radio Caroline became household names and a friend to the listeners.
At long last, we weren't being talked at, we were being talked to. And it was as though there was a friend talking to us, and it seemed so much more personal than the light programme on the BBC.
Within weeks of Radio Caroline's start, other pirate radio stations followed.
Saturday, 9th of May, 1964. In the evening, my brother found Radio Atlanta.
Where the good sounds continue to roll here at 201, 201 metres, remember, music. The good ship, Radio Atlanta.
I couldn't sleep at all last night.
Hello, lovely. You're looking mighty fine.
We listened for the first time, but both agreed it's not as good as Radio Caroline.
Of course, in these days, if you wanted to make contact with your favourite disc jockey and ask for a record, it had to be done through the post. Dallas Wilcox.
I suppose the first station I wrote to would have been Radio Caroline, and in fact I still have a letter that was sent back to me from Carl Conway, who was one of the early DJs at the time. But I wrote to many of them from then on, and in fact I still keep some of the replies that I've received.
You know, if it wasn't for you, the listeners, there wouldn't be any Caroline. You wanted it, and you got it. And it's the same with the Caroline Club.
Thursday, 23rd of July, 1964. After filling in an application form and sending it off with 5 shillings earlier this month, my Caroline Club membership items arrived in the post. A membership card, sticker and a welcoming letter explaining that Caroline and Atlanta had merged and the badges are now out of date, but I would receive a new star badge later.
Peter Punchard also joined the Caroline Club.
You just wrote off and he was sent a pack which got all the pictures of the disc jockeys, which it's quite amazing to see some of them because you hadn't got a clue what they looked like without these photographs. You imagined them to look like whatever, and they were completely different. Yeah, I've still got the Caroline card, the club card, I'm number 7131, it's looking a bit tatty now after all these years, but yeah. and the sticker, yeah, I love Caroline on 199 with the Caroline Club sticker.
Vivian Barnard did more than just write to her favourite disc jockeys. If you went to Clacton, Frinton or Walton, you could see Radio Caroline just off the coast.
Monday, 27th of July, 1964. My family and I on holiday this week, staying near Walton on the Naze. I went to the pier with my mother in order to go out on the pleasure boat, the Lady Kent, which makes trips out to the Mi Amigo, the Radio Caroline ship, for 5 shillings. When we reached the ship, I noticed that the hull was painted dark green and the top part of the boat was white. There were some men on deck drinking cans of 7-Up. I recognised one of the men to be Simon D from a photo I had and called out to him. He confirmed he was Simon D and blew me a kiss. He was wearing a dark green Wincheater jacket. We didn't go very close to the ship. We just cruised past. I had my radio with me, and on the way back to shore, one of the disc jockeys played Have I the Right by the Honeycombs for all the cats on board the Lady Kent. Come right back. If I could, you'd see how much you send those shivers running down my spine. Ooh, have I the right to thrill you? You know I'm waiting till you give me the right to make you mine.
Vivian Barnard soon became a regular on the sightseeing boats going out from Walton, going back again and again. And again.
Sunday, 16th of August, 1964. My parents and I went to Walton on the Naze. We arrived just in time for me to board the Lady Kent at the end of the pier for my 6th visit to the Mi Amigo. A sunny and warm day, but the sea was very choppy. Took some weekend magazines, a thriller story, and a joke book to give to the disc jockeys. We stayed about 10 minutes alongside the ship, very close this time. 7 men came out on deck with 1 woman. One of the men was Tony Blackburn, who started working on Caroline the last week of July. He has a Beatle haircut.
The Tony Blackburn Show.
Yes, indeed. And talking about requests, let's have a request here. It's going out to all the lads. It says here, for all the lads in my group at Chelmsford, and also says me Bird. And the guy who writes this is Glenn Martin, and he'd like a record played especially for his, as he called it, Bird. He doesn't mention the name of his bird, but I guess she knows who she is. So for all you lads in Chelmsford and Glenn's Bird.
There she was, just walking down the street singing. Tapping her fingers and shuffling her feet singing. She looked good. She looked fine. She looked good. She looked fine. And I nearly lost my mind.
Tony Blackburn.
My first impressions were that this little boat there, bobbing about in the North Sea, was making so many political storms. And it was a very cosy little ship, but I always felt it wasn't quite big enough for what it was doing.
What it was doing was playing music all day long. But those early days of Caroline, as far as the music was concerned, weren't that much different to the light programme.
Radio Caroline was really playing all sorts of music. In the morning we used to play pop music, and then at 9 o'clock, I think it was, Simon D came on and played show music, really. Then it went back to pop music, and then after that it sort of went back to big band sounds. I used to do a big band show at 8 o'clock in the evening.
There was no denying that Radio Caroline was hugely popular, but during the summer of 1964, more commercial radio stations appeared from the wartime forts in the Thames estuary.
Once again, the radio search call sign. Oh, simply crazy. You've got to keep it swinging, you know. And it's enough cheddar for me now, and if I want to keep it swinging, all I've got to do is just turn the switch, and what do we get? We get the Applejack.
You're in tune with your good music station, Radio Invictus, broadcasting on 306.1 meters in the medium wave band.
Like many young men at the time, Dallas Wilcox thought the idea of being a pirate radio disc jockey was appealing.
I remember writing to Radio Invictus to try and see if they were interested, and they invited me to send a tape. And the reply came back from Tom Pepper, and he said in his letter, in fact I've still got it here, it says, "We like your music, but," underlined, "I'm afraid your voice is too amateurish. We want a DJ with a professional touch. Perhaps when you have improved, you would like to try again."
Some applicants for jobs as disc jockeys on the pirate stations obviously had the professional touch.
Tuesday, 1st of September, 1964. Disc jockey Keith Skews presented his first show on Radio Caroline today.
Yes, it's still top, the Beatles there, and Ticket to Ride.
The time now is exactly 5 o'clock, Bulova Watch Time. B-U-L-O-V-A, Bulova, the world's largest makers of quality Swiss watches.
Have yourself a time. Tune into Caroline and Carbo Shoes. Keith Hughes.
It's back to the current sound now. The Supremes. Number 34 in America.
Throughout the remainder of 1964, you could listen to pop music on Radio Caroline on 199, or any number of smaller, more amateurish stations from the Thames Estuary forts. But that was all about to change. Tony Blackburn.
Well, I was doing the breakfast show on Radio Caroline one day, and out of the mist, this massive great minesweeper suddenly appeared. We had word that it was coming, an American minesweeper called Radio London. The MV Galaxy, it was called, and I remember listening to the test transmissions for the very, very first time. I heard these terribly professional, wonderful American jingles, you know, wonderful Radio London, Big L, and I thought that really is the station that I want to work for.
Wonderful Big L!
Tuesday, 5th of January, 1965. I spent the day in bed with a bad cold, listened to Radio Caroline and sometimes to Radio London to find out what it was like. It started broadcasting a few weeks ago on the 23rd of December.
Radio London was certainly slick and professional. Many would say brash, but a lot of the Caroline audience tuned to 266, including Peter Punchard.
In the early days of London, I was really a Big L man. Pete Brady in the morning, was it Tony Windsor, Dave Dennis, Len Cash and Kenny Cash, and of course Mark Roman in the evening. So it used to go right throughout to the day. So, I mean, I can remember the lineup.
Wonderful Radio London.
That's Herb Alberts and the Tijuana Brass. Tijuana Taxi. The end of that sounds like T.W. blowing his nose, isn't it? Never mind. It's going to be a great big hit for Mr. Herb Albert. 18 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock is happy get-up-and-go-go time.
Shiver into summer with collar at your fingertips.
It was 1965. In the space of just 12 months, we'd gone from no radio choice to a whole wave band full of radio stations. Dallas Wilcox remembers Radio City.
Radio City!
I was quite surprised to find a female voice on that particular station. She was a 13-year-old by the name of Candy Calvert. Like a lot of the other DJs, I wrote to her, and she wrote back, and in actual fact, she became a pen friend, and we wrote to each other quite often.
Candy was the daughter of Reg Calvert, who owned Radio City, and was to figure in tragic circumstances later in the story of pirate radio.
I do hope, by the way, that my wife does get accommodation tonight, and my youngest daughter, which is Candy, is with my wife, and they're in a green Zephyr 6.
Mark West, now broadcaster Mark Wesley, was growing up in Southend and became involved with Britain's first local commercial radio station, or so it was claimed, the original Radio Essex.
You're listening to the voice of Essex. That's Radio Essex, transmitting on 2 WC, Britain's first and only local commercial radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day with the fullest possible variety of music.
I had pretensions of being a guitar hero in a band. The band wanted to have a hit record, and we thought that was the way, or any record actually, we'd be grateful for, frankly. And we bumped into a chap called Rusty Allen, Vince Allen, who was managing the Kingsway Cinema in Hadley. And it was not so much a cinema, more a bingo hall and wrestling on Fridays. And as it was just down the road from where I was working, I used to go and have lunch there. And he was talking about how he had worked on Invicta Radio, and he said, there's loads of these forts, you can go and start your own radio station. I'll go and have a look and see if I can get a boat to take us out to one of these. I said, well, great, I'd love to be involved in some way. A few weeks later, I can't remember what it was, Rusty Allen comes back and he says, well, actually, on my looking for a boat, I found someone who is actually got a fort out there. He's going to start his own radio station, and he's invited me to join him as a program director. So I thought, well, that's great. I'm thinking I'm going to tag along on this and see where it goes. And I eventually sort of begged and borrowed my way in as their first DJ. And the only experience I had before getting on a boat and going out there was actually going in on a Friday night to their wrestling night and playing the records in the projection room. And I remember this old gramophone. And the only thing I knew about any record I was playing was that it was black and had a hole in the middle. That was the limit of my knowledge before I actually sat in front of a microphone some months later to do test transmissions with a very shaky hand and a very nervous voice.
In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm heart of your loving mind.
The Fort Base stations never sounded quite as glamorous as those from the ships.
We listened to Caroline, we listened to Radio London, and we imitated them as DJs because we had no other reference. We just did the best we could and were grateful for it. It was more an outward bound course than a radio station.
The taxman's taken all my dough and left me in my stately home, blazing on a sunny afternoon. And I can't sail my yacht, he's taken everything I've got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon.
Not everybody was able to work for a pirate radio station, but you could get to meet your favourite disc jockeys. More from Vivian Barnard's diary.
Monday, 8th of November 1965. When my brother arrived home from the Chelmsford Grammar School, we both got ready and my mother drove us to the train station. We caught the 5 p.m. train to Colchester in order to meet the Caroline disc jockeys on their way to London. We boarded the appropriate train that came from Harwich with a changeover at Manningtree. On the train, we found Keith Skews, Tony Blackburn, Norman St. John, and a technician called George Saunders. There were about a dozen kids seated around the disc jockeys and chatting to them. I introduced my brother and myself to Norman and George, and they invited us to sit with them. After Keith and Tony finished talking to the others, they came and sat with us. Keith remembered my name and address, and he gave me two mince pies out of a tin he had with him. Tony bought Jim and I a cup of coffee, each from the bar. When we arrived at Chelmsford Station, there were quite a few people waiting on the platform to greet the disc jockeys. They held up the train for 15 minutes.
Dallas Wilcox.
My main memories, I suppose, of meetings with DJs were when I went to Harwich to meet them as they came off the boat, came off the tender, for a break from their duties. Most of them would get on a train at Harwich Parkson Quay. Tony Blackburn quite often was the exception. He had a red sports car that was kept in the car park there at Harwich. So he would go off in his car and the others would get on the train, and a friend and myself would join them with some other fans, and we would go on the train between between Harwich and Colchester and chat to the DJs.
Now
start of 1966, it was a regular occurrence to turn on the radio and listen to the top 40 from a variety of radio stations. But for the shipborne broadcasters, there were problems with the North Sea in the middle of winter.
Thursday, 20th of January, 1966. No Caroline on today. I felt quite concerned as to why until I tuned into Radio London and heard that force 10 gales had swept the Mi Amigo ship to shore last night and she landed on Frinton Beach. All the men on board, including Tony Blackburn, Dave Lee Travis, Tom Lodge and Graham Webb, were rescued in the night by breeches buoy rigged up by the Walton lifeboat crew. The Mi Amigo was in danger of crashing against the sea wall, although she was stuck in the sand most of the time. Perhaps the sand saved her from complete destruction.
Disc jockey Dave Lee Travis was on board.
We braced ourselves ready for the grounding. We hit the ground, the whole ship tilted over, and you've no idea what it's like being in your home and watching a fridge fly across the room at you. That was what was happening, and then of course the breeches buoy was set up. We all ducked as this rocket was shot at the ship. And guess who came off first and landed in the arms of a waiting photographer? Old Blackburn. Cup of tea, towel over his head. Yes, yes, that was his game, all right. Yes, it was an interesting night, that, to say the least.
At the time, Albert Hood lived nearby.
We knew the ship was coming ashore because it was flashed up on television. So we went down to have a look. But by the time we got there, it was already ashore. And I think if I remember rightly, they'd already got some of them off. I always remember them taking Tony Blackburn off, because we're absolutely sure they ducked him on purpose, because he got very wet, but nobody else did.
Girl, you've been so good to me, staying by my side to the bedtime. All my dreams never came true somehow, but things are gonna be different now. And baby, my ship is coming in. Baby, baby.
That must have been a hero, isn't it? I wouldn't have swapped for them for nobody in that, you know. Sea spray everywhere, snow, wind, and cool. I think I'd have stayed on board. I don't think I'd have come off on that breeches buoy.
And as for Tony Blackburn's version of events,
I remember the captain shining this massive great sort of light that he had, and literally about, it must be about 20 or 30 yards away, there were just people walking along the seashore, and I remember him saying, "Mayday," in a very, very quiet voice, and I thought, that's a bit too late. And there was a sort of crunching noise, and we just ended up on the seashore in Frinton.
The Radio Caroline ship was eventually refloated, but there was no Radio Caroline on 199 for a number of weeks, although events on land continued. Back to Vivian Barnard's diary.
Tuesday, 15th of March, 1966. This evening, I went to the Corn Exchange in Chelmsford's Tyndall Square with my brother Jim to attend a disc night presented by Keith Skews and his friend Richard Swainson, who worked on Radio London. We gave 9 shillings for the tickets to a boy called Dallas Wilcox, who was collecting the money.
Dallas Wilcox.
Keith Skews organised disc nights. In fact, I particularly remember those because I still keep the ticket I had for one of those. It was at the Chelmsford Corn Exchange. It was on the 15th of March, 1966, and the tickets cost 4 and 6 pence each.
So Vivian remembered Dallas. Did Dallas remember meeting Vivian?
She contacted me in 1996, after many years, after she'd heard my name on the radio at that time. And I said, "I don't think I ever met you, Vivian." And she said, "Yes, you did. It's in my diary."
Keith looked nice in a polo neck sweater and slacks. He was comparing, and Richard Swainson was playing the records. Radio London disc jockey Dave Dennis appeared on stage. Tony Blackburn was there too. He sang Money, with Episode 6 supplying the backing music. Recording artist Kiki D mimed her record. There were 2 competitions with LP prizes. When my brother and I said goodbye to Keith, he told us that he went into Woolworths in Chelmsford High Street today, and he got mobbed.
And the same thing happens to this day.
We come on in this loop, John B. Grandfather and me, around Nassau town we did roam, drinking all night, got into a fight. Well, I feel so broken, I wanna go home.
these were the swinging 60s. For years, people would talk about how magical this time was, and we were part of it. And still, yet more radio stations were coming on air, it seemed almost day by day.
Wednesday, 25th of May, 1966. In the evening, listened to a test transmission of the new radio station, Radio England, from 9 until 11 p.m.
Swinging Radio England. 24 hours a day, non-stop pop music whenever we wanted it.
Swinging Radio England, where the action is.
We loved the happy on-air sound of the pirate radio stations.
Your Tower of Power.
Tony Callis from Braintree remembers his favourite programme.
I used to listen to Radio City because they used to do the 5 before programme at night, which was Beatles and Stones records, which was half an hour of one Beatles, one Stones. And you could listen, get a whole repertoire of their albums. Over the course of a week, they used to not repeat anything as they went along, which was really good.
But behind the scenes, there were some shady goings on.
Wednesday, 22nd of June, 1966. I read in the newspaper that last Sunday night, several men and a girl raided Radio City. They forced their way onto the Shivering Sun's fort in the Thames Estuary and held the Radio City men as hostages and blackmailed Radio City for £5,000.
Radio Caroline Newsbeat, fast and factual.
37-year-old Reg Calvert, manager of many pop beat groups, including The Fortunes, and owner of the offshore radio station Radio City, was shot dead in a country mansion near Saffron Walden, Essex, early this morning. A man is reported to be helping the Essex police in their inquiries into the shooting.
Dallas Wilcox was at school at the time and has good reason to remember the events. His radio pen friend, Candy, was Reg Calvert's daughter.
I remember that particularly well, that day, because I was in the middle of doing my GCSEs, and I was doing the maths GCSE. I remember that distinctly, and I remember I can see myself at the desk doing this exam, and my mind wasn't not there at all, because I just heard that that Candy's father had been killed. I met with Candy several times after that, and she was still fearful of her life, to be quite honest.
Despite the tragic events associated with Radio City, the fun of the pirates for us listeners continued. It wasn't just the music that we loved. There were the disc jockeys. They were our personal friends. And what about the competitions? John Lawton remembers one in particular.
Within the next few minutes, some lucky Radio Caroline listener could win as much as £2,730. Let's play Caroline Cash Casino.
It had a great jingle, Caroline Cash Casino. It was all sort of American jingles, and it was all sort of very bright and novel to, my family. We used to listen to the Home Service. So it was such a contrast to that. My mother liked it, actually. And I think there was a competition. I think we entered the competition. I don't think we won anything.
Peter and his family weren't the only entrants.
Wednesday, 14th of December, 1966. During my lunch break, I sent a Christmas card to DJ Johnny Walker, who started on Caroline a few weeks ago, and bought 3 cans of Libby's fruit so I could use the labels to send off 3 entries to the Caroline Cash Casino competition. No one has won the current prize yet.
Vivian mentioned sending a Christmas card to disc jockey Johnny Walker. She wasn't the only one to do that either. Walker soon became one of the most popular voices on Radio Caroline.
My first love was always Caroline. Took a tape in and said he'd like to have a job. Waited around in the reception area at Chesterfield Gardens for an hour. I think Terry Bate, the Canadian whiz kid who was involved in the operation, took the tape up to Ronan. Roland heard it and said, and Terry came back and said, right, when can you start? Can you be on the boat tomorrow? I mean, that's typically the way it works.
It was the Johnny Walker Show that we tuned to hear so many of those great songs from the 60s.
The American R&B and the Tamla Motown stuff, that's what I really loved. And so it seemed a natural thing to do was to play as much of that possible on Radio Caroline. And the night time was a brilliant time to be able to do that. And I discovered that many of these classic soul records had a wonderful soul ballad on the B-side. And I often used to play the B-sides as well. So I remember 66, 67 was the real heyday for all those names that are household names like Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, and Sam and Dave, and Eddie Floyd, and plus all the Tamla Motown stuff. So I became, I think, very much known for pushing that type of music.
As I walk this land of broken dreams, I have visions of many things, but happiness is just an illusion filled with sadness and confusion. What becomes of the broken hearted who had love that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind.
Johnny Walker soon gained a huge audience for his show on Radio Caroline from 9 until midnight. John Lawson was listening.
He was a bit naughty, I think, and he did this late night show, and he invited people to park their cars on the edge of the coast and shine the lights, and I think they were supposed to steam the cars up and do things which I didn't understand when I was that age.
Graham Bale and his then girlfriend Mary, now his wife, might have had a bit more of an idea. They had a Johnny Walker Kiss in the Car license, but you had to earn it.
Well, I think we took a few attempts to get it, but we did get it eventually. We were just trying to think of what record we did it to. I think it was Percy Sledge. Pretty sure it was Percy Sledge, and I can't remember where.
Oh, I can.
The Chase.
The first side of the farmhouse.
Let me wrap you in the warm and tender love.
And you had to kiss for the length of the record, and you usually used to pick quite long records for those days. When you did it, you wrote to them, and they sent you back a Kiss in the Car license, which looked about the same size and looked very much like a tax disc. I got stopped by the police once for having this tax disc, and this policeman stopped me, and I had my Del Boy taxing post. And he said, that's a funny tax disc you've got there, sir. And I said, well, that's a Johnny Walker Kiss in the Car license. And he said, you realise you're impersonating a legal tax disc? And I said, well, not really. It was just a bit of fun. And he did let me off. But he looked around the car, and he did me for having no number plate light, and I got fined £2 when parking magistrates called.
The stories of the Frinton Flashers are legendary, but what on earth was it all about? Tony Callis remembers.
There used to mainly be a group of us go to the Albion for a disco on a Saturday night, and then one set had finished, we go along to Frinton, listen to the Caroline, and join in with all the flashing of the lights. There used to be groups of five or six, a gap, and then some more cars, but you didn't really think that you were taking part in anything special because you were listening to the DJ saying, oh, flash your lights now, and you've done it.
Hello again. What we're going to try this time is we're going to try and get two young ladies and two young gentlemen together. So, look, are there two young ladies together in a car out there? Give us a flat. Only two young ladies. Yeah, that's a nice bright one. Left the lights on over there. Okay, now look, if you can flash out your registration number, so if you do the first number of it now, okay?
Sometimes they used to call out to say, oh, is there anybody out there? Because they didn't have anybody that flashed their lights, and you'd flash your lights a couple of times to them. And then they'd call out a certain name people had sent in requests. And they say, is Jeannie listening? And they'd flash their lights four times or something. Or if you just felt like flashing the lights at them and hope that they'd see some and make a remark on it.
One, two, two. That's three, four, five. That's it. Five is the first number, okay? Flash if you got that. That's right. Now do the second one. Is that it? Is that the full number? Yes, right, what have we got there, Andy?
5696MX.
Okay, now look, flash out the letter that starts off the make of car now, okay? The letter that starts off the make of car, that's A. An Austin Mini? No. Austin Cambridge? No.
1100.
Austin 1100. Right, that's great. Now look, spin the record, Andy, and we'll for a couple of guys after this. So if the two guys together out there, we'll get your number after this, and we'll get you to drive together, and then you can meet. That'll be nice.
Roger Day and Andy Archer, flashing in print.
We skip the life fandango, turns cartwheels across the floor. I was feeling kind of seasick.
For almost 3 years, the government had been threatening to close down the pirate stations, and we were having much too much fun, so it couldn't last. Many listeners wanted to fight for their pirate radio stations.
Thursday, 9th of March, 1967. Today, I sent a carefully worded letter to Harold Wilson, the Prime Minister, asking him not to ban the pirate stations. The disc jockeys are often urging us to write to the Prime Minister or our MP to tell them how much we want the pirate stations to keep broadcasting. We have got to do everything we can to keep them on the air. I couldn't bear to lose Radio Caroline.
Vivian wasn't the only person to write protest letters. The Prime Minister's postbox must have been particularly full in 1967.
But I remember writing letters that I had published in newspapers and magazines. I wrote letters certainly to my local MP, who was at the time Anthony Buck, and received a reply from him. And though he had sympathy for our feelings, nevertheless, unfortunately, the Act, the new legislation, did go through, and it was a very sad period of time.
When you're walking down the street with your transistor radio, everybody has a good time. You can dance to the beat of your transistor radio, even when the sun don't shine. You can hear your favorite rock and roll, rhythm and blues with a lot of soul.
Was the summer of love, and despite all the protests, the pirate stations were in their death throes.
Wonderful Radio London, have you heard?
The daily threats to close down the radio stations just made the listeners crave for more radio, and we started tuning further afield to capture those radio stations that we'd not come across before. More from Peter Punchard.
We went on a school trip to the North Norfolk coast. We were able to take radios with us, and we were listening to Big L in the bus. As we got further north in Norfolk, it started to fade. This other station started to come in, and it was Radio 270. I did listen to it quite a bit after that.
That's it. I was Kaiser Bill Batman from Whistling Jack Smith, number four in the 270 Fun 40 this particular week.
Peter also has memories of listening to Radio 390, though he'd never have admitted it at the time.
Radio 390 was like a sweet music station, a middle-of-the-road music station. It was competing in some ways, I guess, with the light programme. It's more like the BBC in some ways, but it was very, very popular. Yeah, a lot of older people, people of my age now, listened to it, yeah.
390 time is now just after 6 o'clock.
Thank you.
presenting Eve, the woman's magazine of the air, takes you stateside.
But as youngsters, it was Caroline in London that we were really interested in, constantly playing the hit tunes of the day.
Going back in time on the sounds of the nation, it's the Caroline Flashback.
A tenement, a dirty street, walked and worn by shoeless feet, in silence long and so complete, watched by a shivering sun. Old eyes in a small child's face, watching as the shadows race through walls and cracks and leave no trace, and daylight's brightness shun.
The days of Pearly Spencer. The race is almost run.
Sunday, 16th of July, 1967, took Scott McKenzie's advice in his current hit San Francisco and wore some flowers in her hair.
If you're going to San Francisco.
Geraniums from the pub's window box. Off to Walton again for another trip to the Mi Amigo. The Lady Kent left from the end of the pier at 11:30 a.m. The skipper today was Frank Bloom. On the deck of the Mi Amigo were Robbie Dale, Johnny Walker, and Dutchman, Johnny B. Good. Took some more photos and handed Robbie a request for the Beatles' new disc, All You Need Is Love. I asked Robbie Dale, where is Kiefer's? That's Keith Hampshire. I knew he was on board. Robbie replied that he is asleep in his bunk. Come on board and wake him up. I became all excited at the thought of it and grabbed hold of Robbie's hand and placed my foot on the side of the Lady Kent ready to be hauled aboard. Then Frank Bloom called out to me, sorry, I can't allow you to go on board. The Coast Guard will be watching us with their telescope, and I would be in trouble. He apologised afterwards because he knew how disappointed I was. I kept thinking as we chugged away from the side of the ship, why on earth couldn't we have gone round to the other side of the ship? Then the Coast Guard wouldn't be able to see us.
It's nothing you can do that can't be done. Nothing you can say that can't be sung. Nothing you can say that you can learn how to play the game. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Nothing you can do but you can learn how to be you in time. It's easy.
But it seemed not even love could save the radio stations. One by one, the announcement of closure came.
I was very disappointed when I heard that Big L wasn't going to stay on. I mean, it was probably disappointing to everybody, but in the end, we understood it was run as a commercial organisation, and they just simply didn't want to know.
What a sad day August the 14th, 1967 was.
Big L time is 3 o'clock, and Radio London is now closing down.
There were tears. But Caroline vowed to continue.
You naturally have our assurance that we intend to stay on the air.
Tuesday, 15th of August, 1967. The Marine Broadcasting Offences Act came into force today. I suppose all the radio ships and forts have closed down now. In the Daily Sketch today, there was a big picture of a large crowd of fans at London's Liverpool Street station who went to meet the Radio London DJs off the train. Some held banners saying things like, Wilson out, and free radio for Britain. There was also a picture of Keith Skews and Mike Lennox looking very harassed inside a car. They had just been mobbed. The Daily Sketch reported that along with Caroline South, Caroline North is still broadcasting legally because it is anchored off the Isle of Man.
Dallas Wilcox remembers just how special those pirate stations were.
With pirate radio, we got the records that we wanted to hear when we wanted to hear them, such a variety, put to us in a nice friendly way by friendly DJs who were happy to chat away to us. We felt that we were needed. I didn't get that same feeling when I was listening to the Light programme on the BBC, but I honestly felt that these people did care for their listeners and were interested in their listeners and were really keen to make certain that they provided the sort of service that we wanted to hear.
Even now, Peter Punchard is convinced of the Pirates' importance.
They changed the face of broadcasting, as simple as that.
And he'll always have fond memories of listening to the radio.
Very good, fun times, yeah, riding around as a kid with a transistor radio in your cycle bag and listening to Caroline and listening to Big L. It was just the soundtrack to life at the time. Everywhere you went, you heard it. Everywhere.
And what are the people that worked on the radio stations? Dave Lee Travis.
Radio Caroline, to me, was one of the single most important aspects ever in the history of popular music.
Johnny Walker.
Because I remember before any of this happened, all I wanted to do was to grow up like my dad and carry a briefcase and wear a suit. I thought, you know, that was the future. And it's hard to imagine it now, but youth was very much frowned upon, youthful expression. And so very much young people thought, right, this is our time, you know, this is for us. And I think that's what Caroline really meant. It was a radio station by and for young people at a time in the history of British music when we produced just some of the finest music that we have ever done, that we conquered the world. British pop music in the 1960s conquered the world, no question. And Caroline was a part of that whole movement.
Ronan O'Reilly was the man who started Radio Caroline.
I mean, it was all about feelings, about expression, about lots of young people in the 60s being able to actually kick out the jams and get it rocking, you know, and that turned on all kinds of things. I mean, the 60s were fantastic, and they sort of did a lot for, not just for Britain, but they did a lot for around the world, and a lot of people were involved in that. I mean, all the groups, everything came together at the right time. It was extraordinary. It was an extraordinary moment in sort of musical history of Britain, you know, the 60s.
Vivian Barnard.
I was very upset because it was the end of an era. We had Radio 1, and all my favourite disc jockeys moved over to Radio 1. It still wasn't quite the same.
Our story takes us to 1967. Caroline continued, and continues to this day. But to tell the full story of Radio Caroline would take much too much time, and you'd never believe it anyway. But as we've proved, it was a magical time to listen to the radio.
I don't think it will ever happen.
You've been listening to All at Sea, a tribute to the pirate radio stations of the 1960s, with thanks to Mary and Graham Bale, Vivian Barnard, Tony Callis, Albert Hood, Peter Lawton, Peter Punchard, Mark Wesley, and Dallas Wilcox. Thanks also to Steve England, RadioFab.com, the Pirate Radio Hall of Fame.com, to Tony Blackburn, former Radio Caroline presenter, now with the BBC in London. To Dave Lee Travis, former Radio Caroline presenter, now with the BBC Three Counties Radio. To Johnny Walker, former Radio Caroline presenter, now with Radio 2. And to Ronan O'Reilly, never ever likely to work for the BBC. It's been put together and produced by me, Ray Clark, former Radio Caroline presenter, now with the BBC.
Pirate BBC Essex. You get a positive charge, here on Pirate BBC Essex.